Welcome to the National Awakening Conference Call. I'm Bob Knight, Senior Fellow with STAN, and here's your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Thank you so much, Bob, and thanks everybody for joining us. Our original guest could not be with us today, but that works out just fine because I have a lot to say about this election, and I want to hear from you all as well. So we're going to open up for questions and comments in about 10 or 15 minutes, but let me put a few things out there for your consideration, because obviously you all undoubtedly have your own thoughts and ideas about what just went down. You know, as I've traveled the country, there's a question I've been asked repeatedly. And the question is, how can the black community vote for Democrats given the terrible track record that they have? I mean, poverty, crime, poor schools, and yet they keep voting for them. I've been asked that question, I don't know, literally 100 times, maybe more. Well, we got to ask the same question now, don't we, of the American people. How can, given the terrible track record that the Democrat Party has, now, we can talk about cheating all we want, and I don't have any doubt that some cheating took place. But look, you cannot deny that there are millions of Americans who are voting for these people. I mean, that's obvious. And maybe the cheating at the margin notwithstanding, they're still getting votes. I mean, they're not making it all up. And the question is, how in the world can they be voting for people? How do you vote for open borders? Your country is being virtually invaded. How do you vote for the epidemic of crime to continue with prosecutors who won't put people in jail and folks talking about legalizing the harshest of drugs and creating basically clinics where people can come in and shoot up and you got homelessness and crime running rampant, and you've got schools that aren't delivering. I mean, our children are further behind now than they were before COVID. They were already behind, but they're further behind now. We know that the government school system is, by and large, controlled by Democrats and their allied unions. How in the world can you vote for more of spending that is, we're now paying $1 trillion a year in interest? I mean, we have got a $31 trillion debt now that we're all living under. And look, I'm not saying that Republicans aren't responsible for some of this. Clearly they are. But the Democrat Party has led the way. How can you vote for people telling your children that they don't know what gender they are and they will be happy to guide them in that without the parents' knowledge or permission, by the way? How do you vote for more of that? And yet, lots of people do. And so that's what I want to reflect a little bit on. I know, here again, we can talk about the issue of cheating. It is important. But now it seems to me it's important more at the margins than it is at the core of the situation that we are facing right now. We were looking at a red wave. And I was calling for and praying for and hoping for and even predicting a tsunami. And so it is profoundly disappointing to see what's happened. You can't attribute all of it to cheating at the ballot box. You just can't. So let's deal with what we are confronting here. How can black people continue to vote for a party that is doing them such a disservice? So how can Americans vote for a party that is doing the country such a disservice? Here's the first thing I want you to remember, and Republicans don't seem to get that, which is why we seem to be so capable of snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory. Demagoguery beats pedagogy, and emotions beat facts. Did everybody hear what I just said? Demagoguery beats pedagogy. In other words, you can teach and tell the truth and explain, but a demagogue who hits the right notes will overwhelm facts and information. a demagogue who moves people's emotions will overwhelm truth. A demagogue who puts people in fear of what will happen if they vote for the other guy will win over the person who calmly and reasonably tries to explain where we are and where we ought to go and fails to respond to the demagoguery and the fear-mongering that the other side engages in. I've given one answer when people ask me that. They ask me, well, how can the black community vote? I say they use fear and demagoguery over racism to do it. They tell them, oh, yeah, you might not agree with us on abortion. You might not agree with us on same-sex marriage. You might not agree with us on... But remember, those Republicans hate you. They are racist. They want to put you back in slavery. They want you destroyed. They don't want you to have a job. This is what they sell. They say, well, Mr. Jackson, aren't you exaggerating a little bit? No. When George Bush was running, they actually put flyers out in the black community saying, George Bush had a plan to put black people back in slavery. And Joe Biden said essentially the same thing. They're going to put y'all back in chains with what he considered to be sort of the black sounding voice or whatever in his own racist mind he's got in mind how black people are supposed to sound. See, they're demagogues. And so everything was proceeding okay, but I guarantee you folks that they poll tested this, they focus grouped this, because when you see them coming out with the same phrases over and over and over and over again, somebody has told them this will work. We poll tested it, we focus grouped it, it will work, you got to stay on it. And what is that? They are a threat to our democracy. Democracy is on the ballot. Now, I have to be honest. I heard that and thought, any idiot knows better than that. But exit polls show that people didn't know better than that, and people did come to vote. People did vote because they thought that democracy was at stake, that democracy was on the ballot. And the reality, folks, is we're the ones who are trying to uphold the Constitution and the rule of law. We're the ones who don't want the criminal justice system to be politicized and be prosecuting or persecuting people because of where they stand politically. We're the ones who want fairness in the marketplace. We don't want discrimination against anybody based on any skin color. And we're the ones who are saying we are a sovereign nation, we have laws, our borders should not be invaded. It's a violation not only of American law, it's a violation of American sovereignty. And we got to uphold that. We're the ones saying don't pack the Supreme Court. We're the ones saying don't get rid of the filibuster. We're the ones saying let's uphold the Electoral College because it has worked for us for almost a quarter of a millennium. And they're the ones who want to dismantle all of that. And we're the ones saying when people commit crimes, they've got to be put in jail. They've got to be punished for the safety of the law-abiding citizens who are their victims. And yet they point the finger at us and say, we are a threat to democracy. I mean, and talk about the big lie. I mean, they say questioning the 2020 election is believing the big lie. But we don't question the 2020 election without evidence. I mean, the evidence is clearly there. It's clear. It is indisputable that they suppressed the Hunter Biden story, which would have had an impact on the electorate. It is clear that they created extra legal means of voting that were not consistent with legislative rules that were in place, but they used COVID as an excuse. It is clear that they created drop boxes that were not even legal, but they did it anyway. It is clear that they engaged in ballot harvesting and mail-in ballots and practice it in states where this had never been done before and was not legal to do then, but they did it anyway. We're the ones trying to uphold the law. We're the ones trying to uphold the Constitution. We're the ones saying we want the system to be fair for everybody. We want the voting process to be to have integrity for all people, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. We want the elections to simply be fair, so when they're concluded, whatever the outcome, we all trust them, win or lose. And they're saying, no, 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 no. We've got to have all these exotic ideas. You don't need to match a signature. You don't need an ID. Everybody should get a mail-in ballot. I mean, things that we know are fraught with potential danger. And yet we're called a threat to democracy. And it worked. Now, it didn't work to persuade any Republicans or any conservatives, and maybe not even independents, maybe. But I'll tell you what it did work to do. It worked to gin up their base. It gave them a reason, in spite of inflation, crime, invasion of our border, debt, the Afghanistan debacle. Emotion overrides facts, particularly when your people or your group, as the Democrat Party has become, that basically wants to govern itself and govern the country on the basis of people's feelings. You are not a male because you have male genitalia, because you have the Y chromosome. If you feel like a female, you're a female. I mean, this is where they live. They live in the realm of feelings. And they use emotion and demagoguery against us. And here's the other point. I mean, here again, I'm as guilty of it as anyone. Abortion can't possibly override the fact that you can barely buy enough groceries at the supermarket. It can't possibly override the fact that you got to put a tank of gas in your car instead of a full tank because the prices have gone up so dramatically. It can't possibly override the fact that we're all looking over our shoulders now because crime has become so brazen and so bold and so rampant, and the person who commits the crime is so likely to be turned, even put in jail, but to be let out with no cash bail. You can't possibly override that your right to an abortion has been taken away. Well, it's a lie. That did not happen. It's now up to the states. The states have to deal with the issue. It was never a constitutional right, but they pushed it. And part of that theme, the end of democracy, the end of your rights. We're taking away the rights of women. And it worked. The exit polls say it worked. And I saw interviews where people said, I decided I was going to vote for one reason, because they're trying to take away a woman's right to an abortion. And here's where I'll close on this and get your reflections. Look, we know that basically none of the stuff that they were running on was true. Okay, we know that. The problem is we assumed, I think most Republicans assumed, and by the way, there's some other issues with regard to McConnell, and I'll touch on that too, but we assumed that because these things weren't true, that they didn't really matter. But see, they don't have to be true. They just have to be a demagogic appeal to emotion, and that's enough. The same way you appeal to a black voter by saying, those Republicans want to put you back in slavery. And thinking people go, that's nuts. We're going to have to become a lot more nimble than we've been. We should have responded to those issues forcefully. And frankly, we didn't. We were focused on the facts and the truth and the information. And we're going to have to learn. That's not how you fight demagogues. That's not how you fight propagandists. You've got to respond forcefully to the lies, to the propaganda, to the demagoguery. You've got to expose it as such so that people understand it. And they understand that there's an attempt to manipulate them, to use them, and to use lies and deceptions, and again, to just move people emotionally to disregard the facts and information. Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, Ronna McDaniel had millions of dollars to expend in this election. Did they do any of that? And the answer, in my view, is absolutely not. They didn't do any of that. They didn't do any of it. In fact, Mitch McConnell even worked against a conservative Republican in Alaska trying to get Lisa Murkowski reelected. And there were candidates who were supported by Donald Trump because he doesn't like Donald Trump that he wouldn't support, and those candidates lost. I'm not saying they would have won without if Mitch McConnell had done his part, but I tell you what, they would have come a lot closer because we're already being outraged by the Democrats. We're already being they're already outraising us and outspending us because they've got all these billionaire leftists who, as indoctrinated as they are, they don't realize if these leftists were to actually take over and have their way, they'd be the first ones to go. But they're convinced that that's the key to the future. So I'll say this. In my view, there are a number of things that are part of the way forward. I think one is, obviously, we've got to become a lot more nimble, a lot more forceful, a lot more direct. I think one of the reasons why DeSantis carried Florida is DeSantis is no mealy-mouth. Now, he's not a bomb thrower, but he's not mealy-mouth. And he doesn't make things personal, but he's not mealy-mouth. I mean, you come at him with lies, he comes right back at you. And he comes back at you forcefully and challenges. And I think the American people desperately need that kind of leadership. And by the way, this is not an endorsement of DeSantis or anybody else, because I haven't decided what I'm going to do with regard to this upcoming election. But it's simply to say we need leadership that understands that you simply can't let this stuff get by. You've got to respond to it. The second thing I'd say is this. Our politicians are going to have to realize going forward, you can't simply be a political leader. You've got to be a cultural leader. You've got to address these cultural issues. I was told when I ran, stay away from those issues. Stay away from those issues. Nobody wants to hear that. And look at where we are now, because the Democrats are pushing them, and they're pushing them unabashedly and unapologetically, because they can always overcome them by some demagoguery that makes you forget about that, makes their constituents forget about that, and focus on this. And we've got to become smart cultural leaders that point out the depravity and the degeneration that the Democrat Party is leading us toward, and without apology. I mean, all this critical race theory, dividing us racially and slicing and dicing us into tribes, and this transgender and homosexual propaganda that they want to push on. Look, when Florida passed their law against teaching children these sexual subjects, it was kindergarten to third grade. And you would have thought that he was passing a law saying, let's go out and kill the homosexuals. I mean, they acted like it was the end of the world, which tells you how far gone they are, that they think speaking to kindergartners through third graders about their sexuality is something that they are absolutely determined to do with or without parental permission, and that a governor who stops them by signing a law that says you can't do that is somehow a monster and an extremist. Well, guess what? The people of Florida appreciated it. And he won by almost 20 points. If we could have replicated across the country what happened in Florida, cheating wouldn't even have been an issue, because the margins would have been so large that we wouldn't have had to focus on it. We wouldn't have to concern ourselves with it. But DeSantis, of course, has his own universe down there, and he's able to control that. But with these other candidates, depending on help and support from the Republican infrastructure, which they didn't get, and the unwillingness to address these issues directly and forcefully as DeSantis has, and this is what you get. You get a lot of very close elections, but elections in which we lose. Right now, we are in danger of being a vote shorter in the Senate than we were. And we're going to hold the House, it looks like, by literally vote. By one vote. So, folks, we've got some real adjusting to do. And then finally, I'll say this. In my view, and this is just me, and I'm not asking anybody to agree with me or disagree with me. You can talk about this if you want to. You can think about it. And you may mentally disagree, and that's fine. I think Ronna McDaniel, Kevin McCarthy, and Mitch McConnell all need to go. They need to go. I think this is what they've delivered us. They've delivered us a milquetoast, non-committal party lacking in conviction. This is the kind of races they've run, the kind of people they've supported, and look at what it got us. And I don't know whether all of you, or for that matter, any of you heard me, but back in June, I called for the resignation of Ronna McDaniel because Ronna McDaniel was running around talking about we all need to be celebrating Gay Pride Month. And I'm thinking, celebrating Gay Pride Month? You got parents all over the country up in arms over this whole homosexual activist movement in their schools, teaching their children things that they don't want them to learn and telling the parents to go pound sand because you don't have anything to say about it. And you want us to celebrate Gay Pride Month? What's wrong with you? Here she's out sending out communiques. You know, we celebrate Gay Pride. I mean, what? Are we a republic? Is the Republican Party a conservative party that believes in the traditional family? Or are we just Democrat light? And Mitch McConnell's no different. I mean, his wife's all... She's all bound up. His whole family's all bound up with China. And we don't need somebody leading the Senate who's all tangled up with communist China. And Kevin McCarthy, in my view, I mean, he raised a lot of money and spent a lot of money, but the leadership simply wasn't there. You know, there are people who are good fundraisers but aren't good leaders. We can always find good fundraisers, but we need leaders. We need leaders for the party. Andy Biggs apparently is going to challenge Kevin McCarthy. Some are saying that that's not just not a smart move with a one-vote margin. We could find ourselves losing some votes by having some Republicans go over to the Democrat side. That's always possible. You'd still have Liz Cheney in the Republican caucus, so hold on to your seats because it's going to be a rough ride. But nevertheless, you can't. The definition of insanity is what? Continuing to do the same thing and expecting different results. I don't have anything personal against Kevin McCarthy or Ronna McDaniel or Mitch McConnell. I don't know any of them personally. But I do know what I see, and I think that the time has come for them to hang up their hats and just ride off into the sunset and let others have a crack at providing leadership for the Republican Party, if it's truly going to be a conservative party as opposed to just a watered-down version of the Democrat Party. So I'll stop there. And, look, I know all of you probably have some strong feelings about what's happened in this last election, and I'm happy to take your comments. I would just caution you to not give a speech so we can get as many calls in as we can. Don't give a speech. Make your remarks, and then I'll either respond or we'll go on to the next call. Press *6 to get in queue to ask any question or make any comment that you'd like to make. Okay, do we have anybody?
Yes, CW. Bruce and Jody Kemp from Wilmington.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
We're doing great. Hey, I'm wondering if you can put in some radio messages into that Walker early vote and create some doubt in people's minds in the black community on not just the Christian black stations, but the other black stations, so that people can start to wonder if they're just making a bad mistake with Warnock.
Look, as a matter of fact, Bruce, believe me, you'll be hearing from me because we began calls this morning to put together a budget for a bunch of ads on urban stations around Georgia, right leading right up to the election. So, yeah, I love that idea. We've got to raise questions in people's minds. And by the way, here again, the specific numbers in Georgia are not yet in, but we know what the polling was showing. The polling was showing that both Stacey Abrams and Raphael Warnock were underperforming in the black community. Stacey Abrams lost big. Raphael Warnock could not quite get to 50%. And I think that's also because he suffered a diminution in black support. So, yeah, we've got to get Herschel Walker over the line. And we're going to be doing everything in our power to do that, Bruce. Yeah. In fact, I met with some folks today. We're talking about going down there and getting into some of these churches down there and getting these people directly to the polls to vote for Raphael Warnock, to vote, forgive me, ooh, Lord, strike me. Don't strike me, but to vote for Herschel Walker and to vote out Raphael Warnock. Okay, let's take the next one.
Hello, Bishop. This is Claire Lopez, Northern Virginia.
Hey, Claire. Claire, I've been thinking about you. I got to talk to you after when we get to this call. You and I need to talk. Go right ahead, Claire.
Surely. Sounds good. Well, I agree with you 100% in what you said. And I just wondered if you and maybe some folks on the call might have heard Mark Levin on his Sunday night show a couple nights ago when he said about the elections, he said, we may not have enough Americans in this country left anymore who are constitutional patriots to vote as constitutional patriots. That's what he said. And I think there's a lot to it. We're talking about 100 years of the long march of Marxism through the institutions.
Yep.
This is the result. It's not just leadership or ads or money or messaging or any of those things, although they all play a role, and certainly I take your point about demagoguery and emotion, certainly. But I think it's deeper than that. I think it's broader than that, and I think our response to it has to be as well. Real quick, I'll tell you a real quick story. 1 year ago in the summer of 21, I went with a girlfriend to the Virginia countryside to a Freedom Festival. Speakers, music, patriotic, wonderful. Food trucks. Went and got in line, started talking to the lady in front of me. It was in the middle of the New York mayoral race at the time. And she had come down on a bus that day from New York. And we talked about the race and about New Yorkers and the homelessness, the crime, the needles, and all over the street. And she told me this. She said, people in New York City will step out of their doors in the morning. They will climb over the dead bodies. They will walk around the poop and the pee and the needles. And they will go vote Democrat. That's what she said.
Yeah. Claire, thank you for the call. And by the way, I didn't get into to the whole cultural milieu that's been created by the long march through our cultural institutions, but you are absolutely right. Because you see, the soil has been prepared for the demagoguery. It works because people are fully indoctrinated, and I think Mark Levin is right. I don't know how many constitutional conservatives or patriots we have left in the country. I do believe this. I believe that if we get leadership that will at least, that's what I mean when I say cultural leaders, who will call to the attention of the American people who we are and how we've got to be the greatest nation in the history of mankind. You know, I've said all across this country, as an antidote to the criticism of our country, you know, you don't get to be the greatest nation in the history of mankind when you're only 4.5% of the population by doing everything wrong. You must be doing something right. And, of course, we know what we've been doing right. We've been a constitutional republic, limiting the power of government, maximizing individual liberty, based upon Judeo-Christian values and principles. and it has allowed us to literally dwarf every other nation that's ever existed before us. So you're right, Claire. The long march to our institutions has really produced a citizenry now that is prepared to accept all kinds of Marxist and socialist and collectivist ideas, just to vote for people in spite of the fact that they're voting against their own interests. So all I can say to what you said, Claire, is amen. And now the question is, can we come back from that? And of course, I believe we can. Okay, next question.
Good morning, Bishop, and I want to salute you as United States Marines. Wish you a happy birthday, and thank you for your service, sir. And you're still serving. And so I have a question, but before I give the question, I want to say something to preface my question. Okay, so now the Patriots are meeting in Maricopa. We know and we have the evidence about the machines. How do we expect a different outcome as long as the machines, the software, is owned by the CCP? We have the evidence. Pete Santilli, who, by the way, is a Marine also, served 619 days exposing the junk mortgages, and now they are a group of men of God are down there standing with Arizona. I hear what Claire said. Maybe we don't, or Mark Levin saying that we don't have that many Americans. I don't believe that. But if that be the case, sir, my thing is, united we stand, divided we fall. Should not Ground Zero be Maricopa, where we know that we know the elections were stolen? Not just there. There's no way in my state of New York that we voted Hochul in. I don't know how, but I know that the machines are rigged. We have the evidence. So I say, if you know Pete Santilli, you should join forces with those Marines over there. And my real question was, how do we expect a different outcome as long as the machines are rigged?
Okay. Well, look, with regard to Maricopa County, as long as what people are doing there is peaceful, and they are protesting what they know to be or believe to be just rank cheating, because I know that Carrie Lake believed that she had the votes to win, and it took a week to finally get her the votes to lose. You know, it's like Mayor Daley used to say, it's not a question of win or lose, it's a question of how many votes do we need to win, and we'll find them. And that's it really does feel that way. I'm always a little bit reluctant to jump into that because I don't know the facts. I don't know what machines they use. I don't know what system they use. But I would say, yeah, we ought to stand with people who have evidence that cheating is how the Democrats won the election. And by the way, folks, don't get me wrong. You'll never hear me say they won't cheat, because I think these people are so in love with power that they'll do whatever they need to do. I think all that Claire is saying and what I'm saying is, but the reality is they do have millions of people voting against their own interests. And that's something we just have to contend with. I mean, these people are indoctrinated, and they just don't understand the country. In many cases, they've been taught to hate America as it presently exists, and that we got to do something about it because everything pretty much about America is wrong. And when they use the word democracy, they're not talking about a constitutional republic where we use democratic means to make decisions. They're really talking about doing away with the Electoral College, doing away with anything that gets in the way of their carrying the day. That's really what they're getting at. They're talking about the dictatorship of the proletariat is what Marx called it. Okay, let's take the next question.
Bishop E.W. Jackson, this is Jose from the Democratic People's Republic of California, the stronghold.
Oh, man.
Semper Fidelis, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you, Jose.
two quick questions, one dealing with the level of voting, the different positions. What is more important, school board or president? And the second one is this whole FTX cryptocurrency alleged scam with Ukraine and that coming back to fund Democratic voters. So back to the first question, what is the most important vote, you know, level of voting and level of politician in this country? Is it the president? Is it our House of Representatives, your local representative, or is it school board? And just a quick story, a local candidate supported here went door to door knocking, talking to parents. Little moms had come out with their kids and, oh, I want the LGBT and CRT books in our libraries. We don't want haters, blah, blah, blah. So the one person, one of the candidates said, maybe it's more important to vote for a school board and have that local control because that's the indoctrination that will last for decades versus a president. How much influence does he have on our children and the future generations? And that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Jose. Thank you. Well, look, I think it's all of the above because let's face it, that indoctrination now is happening not only in our government schools, it happens in our colleges and universities, it happens in the corporate world as well now because they're all part of the same indoctrination process. And so they're all in agreement. I've used this before, and I know you all have heard me say it. It's like they belong to one gigantic cult, and they all think the same way. But let me tell you what's important about the power of the presidency. It is the biggest bully pulpit in the world. And just give you one example, and we've only got about, well, we've got about 8 more minutes to go, but let me give you one example. I've said that if Barack Obama, instead of pushing homosexuality and transgenderism and all this stuff, instead of defending Islam at every time he had a chance about how great Islam is, instead of pushing climate change, and it's the end of the world, and I mean, all this nonsense. And you think about what did Barack Obama accomplish? What did he really achieve? You know, not one blessed thing, in my view. But if he had spent some time going into these inner city communities and telling these kids, you got to work hard, you got to stay out of trouble, you got to take care of the children that you father, you got to wait until you're married to have children, you got to develop a marketable skill, you've got to treat others with respect, you got to dispense with the violence. If he had spent 8 years doing that, do you really think it would have had no impact? I think he could have had tremendous impact. But he didn't use the bully pulpit because that's not what's in his heart. That's just me. I tell black folks all the time, tell me one thing Barack Obama did for the black community. There is nothing, because it wasn't on his agenda to try to help black folks. He just liked playing the black victim. But in terms of actually helping people to rise out of poverty, helping them to get a better education, remember he came in, he nixed the Washington, D.C. school choice program. His children went to a very prestigious private school, but he didn't want poor black kids going to one of those schools. So never underestimate the power of the bully pulpit. But look, you're absolutely right. School boards, city councils, that's where the rubber meets the road, and that's where you can have an impact, direct impact on your community and things like the what they're teaching in the public schools and the drag queen story hours and all that kind of mess. You can put a stop to that right there on the spot. And you're right. The president is not on the ground to be able to do that. But I think he can jawbone. He can speak to these university and college presidents and these corporate leaders, and he can use the power of the federal government to put pressure on them to let them know, you're not going to be getting our cooperation in indoctrinating people and mistreating people and persecuting Christians and all this stuff, which is what they're doing right now. So I say it's all of the above. I think we can take a couple more.
Hi, this is Jody Akers from Colorado.
Hi, Jody.
Thank you for your service and your great leadership. I just wanted to say I've been doing politics for 40 years, and I've seen this come in. And since 2000 and Bush and Cheney, I hate to use the word hated, but I hated them. I still do. that they were the communists that really started, like, I remember since 2000, and this just keeps getting on steroids. It doesn't go backwards. However, let me say this. If y'all have a pen and a paper, just write this down, because this is for Georgia. MyFaithVotes.org/write now. So that'll tell you how to write Georgia, people in Georgia. I did it for the nation, where you get a list of people, you send them form letters, you sign your name, you put whatever you want on it, and then you send it out to those people. So we're going to mail a bunch of Christians letters in Georgia, okay, to try to get them to get out there and vote right, okay? So once again, that is myfaithvotes.org/write now. And then I have to say that if it's not impossible, it's not God. This is absolutely impossible. None of us can disagree, okay? So it only took David, a little kid, a shepherd, with a rock to take out the Philistines, right? So Joshua and Caleb, it only took two guys to have the courage to say, we can. Okay, so it's not on us. It's on God. We do our part, and the results are on Him. So I tell Him frequently, Lord, I don't know what you're doing, but you need to. So I do believe there's an underground thing going on, and I think they've got this. President Trump is making an announcement today. He may make people mad. You know, there's a lot of Trump haters because that's all they do is brainwash with the media, and they own all the media. So even our kids, I mean, my son, when I sent him 3 years ago, I sent him the video about the Hunter Biden laptop. And my son, who's 45, actually had the nerve to say, you are dangerously radicalized, Mom, and you need help.
Oh,
my son. He wasn't 6'5 and 240 pounds. I had to put him over my knee and whip him and wash his mouth out with soap. However, when your own children, my whole family's like that.
Yeah.
So we know it's impossible. You can't change their mind. They're brainwashed, okay? So this has been coming in forever. They've been watching the movies, the television shows. It used to be the gay guy lived up in the attic. Now the gay guy is the star of every show. Every commercial is two gay guys kissing. It's repulsive, but it's like that's where we're at. So
all
the
right,
bottom
Jody.
Line is,
okay,
the bottom
Jody.
Line is, it's
okay.
impossible. It's on.
All right, nothing impossible if God is in it. Jody, I agree with you. We're almost out of time, though. Let's get one more call. You know, Jody, nothing you said that I disagree with. So, yeah, God bless you. And please follow up with My Faith Votes. They were supposed to be on today, but they got waylaid. So, okay, let's take one more. You are on.
Praise God. Praise God, Bishop. Jim, I hear. Can you hear me?
All right, Jim, I can hear you.
Yes, listen, Annie Biggs was just live about an hour and a half ago with Steve Bannon about running for the top spot for speaker.
Right.
It's possible.
Right.
That's fantastic. Number two, we need all the Macs to go. And Liz Cheney's not going to happen, so not worried about that. Number one, we need a great third great awakening. That's the issue.
Yes. Yeah.
Number three, we've got to get rid of the machines, folks. I'm telling you now, I've been looking at 2 years, no more machines. Katie Lake was going to take them away. Katie Lake was taking those away, and they had to stop her. They got to stop this machine stuff. So I'm just excited because she's going to fight for this governorship there in Arizona. But I'm telling you, folks, those machines have to go. It'll take 10 years, but Lake was going to take them away, and they stopped her.
Amen.
Not yet.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Jim. I agree with you. I think the machines have got to go. J. Christian Adams says that the best system, based on his long years of working on elections, and he is an election specialist, he said, is paper ballots and machine tabulators. The machines can always be checked, but the paper ballots remain a record forever, as opposed to some digital record that perhaps could be altered, or some digital machine that perhaps could be tapped into. I agree. We've got to get a system that actually works for the tabulation, the accurate tabulation of ballots that we can all be comfortable with. And by the way, here again, I know these Democratic elites will never be comfortable with anything that doesn't allow them to cheat. But I want a country, I want us to be a country in which a liberal can legitimately win an election if he or she persuades the voters to go along with them, as long as the person is not cheating to get there. Now, I want to defeat that person, but when the election is over, I want to be able to say, okay, if we lost it fair and square, not, yeah, we lost it, but we lost it because they stole it. They cheated. And if they had any sense, they would want the same thing. Well, folks, we've got one more election to go. We've got some results waiting to come in, but we got one more election to go in Georgia, and all eyes are on Georgia. And if you want to help us, because we're going to be trying to move as many black voters as we can, I had a meeting this morning with several people who are going to be functioning over the next 3 weeks now in Georgia. We're just scrambling now to quickly get the funds in place to do the things that we need to do and focus on getting these churches and Christians to get out to vote. If you want to contribute to our effort, go to standamericapac.us. That's standamericapac.us, and you can give there. The only other thing I'd say is on November the 19th, we are going to hold our Youth Taking a Stand conference. That's this coming Saturday at 3 p.m. Now, it is geared for ages 18 through 30, but younger people are certainly welcome to join in with their parents' permission. And we would ask you all to tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell someone you know, because I'm sure you all heard the word. Gen Z, ages 18 through 30, voted 63% for Democrats. In fact, I had somebody on the phone say to me, and I'm just repeating what I was told because it is a legitimate question. What is Charlie Kirk doing? I'm understanding he has a budget of $50 million a year. How can we be losing young people at that level? And what is he going to do? Because he's got the biggest youth ministry in the country, and we really need some action on that. So I know Charlie Kirk, and first opportunity I have, I'm going to talk to him about that and ask him what is his explanation for what is going on there. We got to reach these young people. We got to reach minorities. We've got to reach these women. We've got to reach these people who have gotten the indoctrination. They've been hoodwinked. They've been deceived. And here again, they're voting against the best interest not only of themselves but of the country as well and the future of the country for their children and grandchildren. So we got to get to them all. All hands on deck, folks, for Georgia right now so that we can at least pick up one more Senate seat. And by the way, let me just mention this. If you've never read the book Brown is the New White by Stephen Phillips, you ought to read that book because that book points out that 14 years ago, I believe that's if my memory serves me correctly, they were plotting to get Georgia. They've been plotting to get Georgia for a long time. And the formula is just what we've talked about. Demagoguing the minority population, convincing them that Georgia is racist, and convincing them that you got to vote for Democrat candidates or all hope is lost and the worst is going to happen. And they've been working on that with George Soros money, by the way, single biggest contributor to the Democrat Party. You see this guy who just went bankrupt with this, his cryptocurrency deal, he was giving only about a third of what George Soros gives. So yeah. Think about the power of George Soros and the Democrat Party. I said George Soros runs the Democrat Party, and frankly, for all practical purposes, he's probably running the country right now. So we got to stop these people, and right now it's Georgia. Georgia is the fault line. Georgia is the battleground. All hands on deck for Georgia. Help us to do our part. I think some of the most cost-effective political investing you will make because we're very focused on exactly who we're trying to reach. Millions will be spent, but millions have already been spent, and you saw what happened. Still neck in neck. We can spend a whole lot less than that. In fact, our budget is about $70,000 over the next several weeks in order to try to move some of these black voters in Georgia. And if we can do that and do that effectively, we can help make sure that Herschel Walker goes to Washington. God bless everybody. Look, stand up, step up, speak up, refuse to back up, because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.